as you sit and relive that, as you come from this peace pilgrimage, this people's pilgrimage for climate justice, going from a climate leader, diplomat, to a climate justice activist, your thoughts as you sit here fasting, seeing your colleagues, your former colleagues, pass you by?
Well, climate change is something that many people probably don't understand, and they must understand, especially the leaders gathered here, that it is a very serious issue. In fact, it is the defining issue of our generation, and future generations will measure us. They will measure us by how we respond to this crisis.
Do you feel you're more powerful as an insider or an outsider?
I don't really think about the power that I hold. I just think about what I can do as a person, how I can express an act of kindness and love to others so that we can have a better world.
Yebsanyo, thanks so much for being here with us. That does it for this broadcast. Yebsanyo has just walked more than 900 miles from Rome to Paris as part of the People's Pilgrimage for Climate Action. That does it for Democracy Now!, produced by Mike Burke, Carla Wills, Laura Gattis, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Nermeen Sheikh, Sam Malkoff, Ravi Karan, Steve Martinez, Hani Massoud, Juan Carlos Davila. Special thanks to John Hamilton, Renee Feltz, Ariel Boone, Dennis Moynihan, Chuck Skurich, Julie Crosby, Becca Staley, David Prude, Mike DeFilippo. Our website is democracynow.org. You can see our podcast, video and audio and transcripts there. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, let me turn you on to a little Lister secret. Remember Donna from Concert Billboard? She has one of the best shows right here at 90.1 WSB in Stony Brook. Jazz on the Air. Every first and fifth Sundays at 2:30 p.m. to 5 p.m. So you know what to do. Cuddle up with myself, Donna, and WSB. Jazz on the Air. First and fifth Sundays, 2:30 p.m. to 5 p.m. right here at WSB 90.1 FM in Stony Brook and WSB.FM around the universe.
Yes, 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 all the way around the universe. This is WUSB Stony Brook, 90.1 megahertz on the FM frequency modulation dial of your choice. Also streaming live and pretty direct on the internet. That's WUSB.FM. Check it out. There's archives, all kinds of great stuff. Anyway, without further ado, it is 6:01 p.m. on a lovely rainy Tuesday night. So that means it's time for Off the Wall.
Thank you.
right, indeed, indeed. It is Off the Wall.
Yes, yes, it is.
I am Kyle. This is Emmanuel with me.
Hi.
Wonderful, wonderful to have you.
Yeah, it is wonderful. Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, we have an abbreviated show tonight. Again, another basketball game.
Okay, yeah.
I want to say St. Bonaventure. I just like saying it. I just want to say that. No, I think that is the team that's actually playing.
Oh, cool.
Stony Brook women's basketball here at Stony Brook today.
Uh-huh.
That starts at 6:45. That's the last basketball game that will be curtailed by. So,
interesting.
If you're angry at the radio, then don't be angry, because that's, as far as I know, the last one. But we're starting a little bit more quickly this time, because we have less time and we have more to talk about. And boy, a lot's happening. So hopefully we can get to at least some of it. It's raining out. No, that's not interesting. Who cares? What's going on? Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving happened.
Oh, right, right. The holidays are behind us. No, we're in the middle of major holidays.
Well, it's all starting. It's all threatening to start up again.
Yeah, the holiday, if you don't know, that we're talking about is the shopping holiday. That was last Friday, and it goes all weekend into Monday.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So.
True. But Thanksgiving is a holiday that just happened.
Right.
On Thursday, and this seems to come out faster every year. This year was interesting, though, because you met some of my family, and I gave you a list of things at my uncle's place not to talk about, because every year the same thing happens with all kinds of conversations about, you name it, Muslims and Obama and just where things are going in the country, where things have been in the past. And it's just, oh, what's the point? You know, what's the point of just hashing through all of this over and over again? So I basically gave you a list of talking points to avoid,
which
pretty
was
much everything there was.
Which wasn't unlikely. I'm sure a lot of families out there have similar conversations both at the event and maybe beforehand. So you prepared me to a degree, and I was ready to go in and have a nice evening, have a nice conversation, and enjoy some food and some drinks. And, yeah. You know, it did not end up the way I thought it might. I mean, we prepared ourselves. Gave me a little pep talk, I think.
We kind of practiced what we preached. We talked about this a couple of times. As far as what's the point? What's the point of getting to these big, long, drawn-out arguments over doctrines and ideologies and things like that? I'm not saying avoid the issues, but you're not ever going to agree with everybody on everything, and there are some people you are never going to be able to sway, and this was a particular case of you're not going to have any progress whatsoever. So,
especially when you're a guest.
Yeah, but rather than simply shut down completely and say, well, I'm just not going to talk to you anymore or acknowledge you, you try to find the common ground. And when you're talking about people who have seen things you haven't seen. I mean, we're talking, you know, he's in his 80s and he has all kinds of perspectives that I don't understand. It's best sometimes just to listen and you know, speak up occasionally, you know, defend yourself, obviously, or defend
other perspectives,
things you believe in. But there's no real point getting bent out of shape over these things. And you just get so much more out of it if you have a conversation rather than just boycott the conversation. And I think a lot of people do that, unfortunately.
Yeah, you can overcompensate, too, being too withdrawn and not engaging and enjoying differences. Because you're going to have them everywhere in life, and especially, I think, with family and friends. So to take it head on and really go for it and participate was important to me, and I think it mattered in the end. We were happier as a result, right. And everybody had something to say, even if it was perhaps a little different. And boy, some unusual things come out of that as well, because you're open, you're both open you know, whatever sides, whatever strangers maybe are meeting and getting to know one another and sharing. And through that sharing, you can actually have a good time. And sometimes humor helps kind of move things along.
Well, here's the thing. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I just found it amazing because I was talking to some other people that were there.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow the conversation moved to a place between you and my uncle, moved to a place that I never thought it would go. I was worried. I thought any number of issues could be brought up that you would basically take great umbrage at, and rightfully so, because sometimes the perspectives being voiced are just so out there that you can't help but react to them. But I happened to tune in at a certain point, and you were talking about marijuana somehow. And
yeah.
I think he brought it up.
Yeah, it came up. I had been talking for a while, and he remarked about cannabis in the context of some health issues and recovering. And I had been talking about my hand fracture and pain management and healing in general. And he is familiar with the health industry from his profession and so on, and it was very interesting to hear his insights. He's had several different complications and so on, and really was now working on alternatives to like opioids, you know, painkillers, because that had been problematic for some back and skeletal pain he was having, and turned to cannabis. His family actually suggested it, and he was remarking about
there are cool members of my family.
The different administration methods. Well, they were worried, and that's what it sounded like,
but
and that's kind of interesting.
Actually, I think it had a great effect because I have never had such a pleasant get together where there wasn't a lot of bickering and arguing over things of the world, but basically people were kind of open and listening, and I credit. I credit being open to that form of treatment. I think it does have. He said it didn't have an effect on him. I think it did. I think it really did have an effect. It made him a lot more mellow and open and listen. And you two are having a great conversation about quality of weed. I mean, I never thought in any dimension that my uncle would be having a conversation about weed with you, other than with a sheriff standing next to him saying, "Yeah, that's the guy." I did not. I never saw that coming. So. The thing is, it's always fun to be surprised, and surprises are everywhere, and even at Thanksgiving sometimes you can get blown away by our changing world. And this is one of the changes that I think is a really, really good change.
Yeah, don't shut yourself down. Don't shut other people down. Don't shut out that discussion, 'cause, or your listening of it. And I think I credit that conversation we had, that ability to sometimes just listen, you say, as a way of humbling yourself a bit and letting to see where it goes, almost being spectator to the discussion as a healthy way to deal with differences, was really helpful insight, because I think then I was open. I might not have heard the suggestion of this, you know, kind of administration, which is helping. It's actually really helping a lot of people. Vaporizing, I think,
right.
was the discussion. There's been a lot about e-cigs and vaping in general recently, but it's the unsung part of that, I think, is how it's helped medical cannabis patients, people who maybe have dexterity issues and so on, or other health issues that make consuming cannabis difficult, or smoking it. Obviously, concerns about that have come up. So these vaporizing and new technologies are also being used with medicinal cannabis. So it was great to even hear that, and I perked up and was like, "Oh yeah, you know." And I you know, there's a lot going on with it right now, and it was just great to meet on common ground and have a really positive, insightful, enjoyable conversation about new new ways of dealing with pain. And he was great. I mean, he was almost saying, you know, oh, it doesn't affect me. He's, you know, like you said, it probably did have a more of an effect than he realized. And that's what I was talking about with him, is quality and dosage and getting to know how it impacts the onset, so on and so forth. There's a lot of factors involved, and you get variation a lot. And so it was very, very cool that he was trying this on. And I hope a lot of other people out there in other realms too are trying on new things,
right?
Because there's so much out there technologically and so on. So.
And if you hadn't had the conversation to start with, you never would have come to this realization. So it's something really. I learned a valuable lesson then. Well, okay. So all kinds of things we didn't talk about, which is kind of great. That's police brutality and Planned Parenthood. The Planned Parenthood shooting hadn't happened yet. That was still in the planning stages, I guess. And what a horrible thing that was that took place on, Friday that happened? And, you know, it was interesting. So we watched this unfold. We had a day where we weren't even paying attention to the news. And I didn't care about what was going on. And then I said, okay, let's see what's happening. And, of course, there's another shooting taking place again in Colorado. And this time it was a shooting at a Planned Parenthood outlet. It's really weird, too, because you watch these things unfold. And many of our conversations take place over social media, Twitter and the like. And it's funny funny in kind of a weird way to see how people try and brush it off or make it into something it's not, as if they really have an agenda that they have to push at all costs. There was talk of a shooting at Planned Parenthood, and people right away were saying, no, that's not what's happening. It was a robbery at a bank. Yeah, that's what it was. It was a robbery at a bank gone wrong, and they ran to the Planned Parenthood outlet, and that's why they're there. They had nothing to do with Planned Parenthood. That's not what happened, but it's just really weird to see how people feel they have to immediately repaint the situation into something that's, you know, less offensive. Like, for instance, we can look at the latest Trump fiasco. Oh, my God, just never stops. Him making fun of a handicapped reporter. And, you know, if you were watching CNN last night, anybody out there watching CNN, they had this on a loop.
They
showed the guy just making fun of the reporter, making these weird gestures and facial expressions. And, you know, I had the sound off because I had better things to do. If I really had better things to do, I would have turned the picture off, too. But it just kept – every time you looked up, there he was doing the same thing again. I think they gave him more publicity than anybody. And in a situation like that, Trump says, oh, no, it wasn't that at all. I wasn't making fun. That just happened to me making this gesture that kind of mimics this particular condition that this reporter has, and facial expressions, too. But I'm going to claim that I don't know him, even though I met him a bunch of times and was on a first-name basis with him, and I was talking about him. And I referred to him as a nice reporter, meaning that I had some familiarity with him. Even if the guy didn't have any familiarity with him, you would think that he would use that kind of mimicry in the past to make fun of other people. But no, as far as I can see, he only made that particular gesture once in this particular case, talking about that particular reporter. And it just basically means that, you know, you try and deny things that are obviously true. Eventually, they're going to catch up with you. And in this particular case, I think it just shows true colors. But that's an example. That's an example of how people try and paint pictures into things they're not.
You know what I think is really funny? What I observed about that was how Trump has, you know, he was actually in the media yesterday talking about the black vote and who he has that's supporting him and all this coalition, all this good. Oh, we weren't even going to have a press conference. That was his line. He was not even addressing it. He had foot soldiers. And look out for these people. There are Trump foot soldiers out there now, and they do the backpedaling for him. They were in full damage control, but oh no, we're not even admitting this was it was all about how to re-spin and restructure, and it's all about how he didn't know and his response. But they were doing it for Trump. Trump mm-hmm. said that once on the record. Okay, yeah, I didn't recall. I didn't know this guy, but his foot soldiers go out and do the damage control for him while he's down trying to get, you know, black vote out there as one of his hallmarks, which, yeah.
That ain't going to happen.
It's
not going to happen. But, yeah, his foot soldiers are interesting, too. It reminds me a lot, actually, of Scientology. The reason I say that is because whenever you you have some kind of a challenge to them, they respond with humorless vitriol. You know, they're basically very defensive, and they lash out at you, and they attack you for asking the question in the first place. And we're starting to see that more and more with Trump and the people that for some reason follow him and speak for him. It's this, you know, he could start a cult, he could start a religion, he could do it. I'll bet a lot of people would follow. So that's something to be worried about.
I think a doorman should let a door hit him.
Okay, well, that's a good suggestion.
I think that would be hilarious.
Anyway, so getting back to Colorado City, so you had this situation unfolding, and it was truly horrible. But the discussion quickly started, and I was a part of this because it enraged me that here you have somebody who was against Planned Parenthood, had a very specific agenda. He even said no more baby parts when he was finally caught. And this is somebody that listened to what was being said by the Republicans over and over and over again about how evil Planned Parenthood was after looking at that heavily doctored video and basically getting a warped perception of what they were all about. All that beside the point. The thing is, this guy did not like Planned Parenthood, did not like the right of women to have abortion, things like that, and acted out in this particular way by killing people. And how in God's name is that not considered terrorism? It meets all the criteria. It's basically, yeah, you have a political motive and you use fear and intimidation and violence to achieve it.
Yeah,
that is the epitome of terrorism, yet not one media outlet refers to this as terrorism,
no.
except when quoting Planned Parenthood saying it was terrorism. That's the only time they mention it, but they will not say it themselves.
No, they're asking the question. Don Lemon, what's his name? CNN host Don Lemon. I think he probably hates having to ask. It probably is like excruciating for him to have to say, you know, is it homegrown terrorist or is it a man who's deranged? They're literally polling people before they go to a break,
right,
about whether or not it's terrorism. Like, that's even something we're confused about. Yeah, okay, it's this silly aftermath, like, rah-rah, let's be pseudo-backlash, but it's all, you know, not planned at all. It's just like, you know, we're going to jump on the violence bandwagon because we had a, you know, bad summer watching Daesh all the time. That we want to come hard with some homegrown honky boom boom. But seriously, it's complete BS that they can't call it the terrorism. It's that we have to debate that.
Yeah. And if this was somebody who was Islamic, it would not be a question, not for a moment. So these things are important because they define who people are in the eyes of the populace. And you see people walking down the street, you label them because of those perceptions that you have. And in this particular case, you already see the humanization beginning of this person. Oh, he was misunderstood. He lived in this little cabin by himself and had all these strange habits and things like that. Fine, whatever. The point is, he committed a terrorist act. Why can't you say that? The Republicans are all, they got their panties in a bunch about Obama not referring to radical Islam. He won't say those words. Why won't you call this what it is? There's reasons why certain words are used and why certain words are not used. And it's a lot easier for me to understand why Obama will not say radical Islam than it is for me to understand how people cannot label terrorist acts as terrorism. You know, the enemy here is fundamentalism. And I think that's the point of not specifically pointing to one particular religion, which is very complex. You can demonize an entire religion if you want to. But you're basically being very foolish by doing so, because the major victims of Daesh, of ISIL, are Muslims. They are the ones being massacred, Shiite Muslims mostly. So to say that, yeah, Islam is the problem, well, you know, it's kind of weird because they also seem to be the enemy of this problem. So how does that make any sense? Like saying humans are the problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's also that side, I think, that radical white Anglo-Saxon perspective that's hypocritically saying, you know, words matter, and, you know, why won't you call it radical Islamic terror? You know, and they're doing pushing all of that at the same time. They can't even call their base their own. These guys that freak out, you know, with the fertilizer and whatever else, you know, it's hilarious. They get it so wrong. And the one other, you know, the one thing you said about the cabin and everything with this guy,
yeah.
They're showing an image of a cabin,
yes.
And there's a power meter right there, like the meter, the circuit breaker. It's and the dub over that is, he lived in a cabin in South Carolina with no power. Okay, maybe he didn't pay his bill, but I'm looking at a power meter for this stupid place.
Wow.
I mean, you can't even narrate over the still image with a power meter there. It's just so wrong.
Move the camera aside so you don't
crop
see the
it.
Power meter. That's,
yeah.
Wow.
Anyway, it's...
Okay, that's,
oh, man.
That's just bad journalism. Fundamentalism is the problem. It's been the problem for centuries, not just one religion. That's why intelligent people don't point to one specific religion. Yeah, at the moment, there is a lot of Islamic fundamentalists running around doing bad things. Does not make Islam the problem. It makes fundamentalism the problem. Just like when people do things like this, it's fundamentalism of a different sort. When people go to war and react in particular ways, when you go and you label a particular religion, you're basically declaring war on that religion. Is that really what we want? Some people do want that. Some people would like to have a war between the religions. But I'll tell you this, with 1.6 Muslims in the planet,
billion.
In the world, 1.6 billion. Did I say billion or million?
You just said 1.6.
Oh, I'm sorry. No,
that's not 1. Very 6. Many.
1.6 billion Muslims. If there was really a question of going to war with that many people, and they all felt the way that that these right wingers feel Muslims are, we wouldn't have a chance.
Well,
no chance.
Exactly, and I think that there is a will for that. I think on both sides. And it's disgusting. I think half of it is like rah-rah weapon fetish.
Uh-huh.
Like, I mean, I've seen Lord of War. We know about the military-industrial complex, all of that. I think on both sides, there's just this glorification that this will be tantric blood orgy to end all life everywhere. And I think the other part of it is absolute hatred for the other. On both sides.
Yes.
And all of that is beneath us.
Uh-huh.
Royally.
Right.
As a upright primate of sorts, it is so beneath us and irrelevant. It is the sickness. It is a complete disease and perversion of everything that's possible. And yet everyone is in the back of their minds, I think, getting something out of this, and I don't know how to not give it attention and still address it.
Yeah, I think that's the point, that it's a relatively small number of people who preach this kind of hatred on both sides, and we need to not take any of them seriously enough to stop them, but not seriously enough to actually consider what they say as anything remotely close to the truth. And if you want to push people into the arms of lunatics like that, alienate them, you know, make them the same, and you'll be doing exactly that. And that's what I worry about is that kind of ignorance. You know, the situation keeps getting more complex every week. This past week, we had the situation where Turkey shot down a Russian bomber. You need a chart for this now. Russia was bombing in Syria. Everyone bombs in Syria. It's like the thing to do these days. They were in Syria, but they weren't bombing Daesh. They weren't bombing ISIL. They were bombing the Turkmen. Now, the Turkmen are not necessarily Turks. They're ethnic Turks, but there's something else going on. I don't really know what it is. I'm not sure if it's related to Turkmenistan or what. But they were bombing these guys. And these guys are friends with Turkey. And Turkey doesn't like it when Russia bombs the Turkmen in Syria. And Russia claims that Turkey claims that Russian jets flew over Turkey for about 19 seconds or something like that. And they also claim they warned them 10 times. I don't know how you warn somebody 10 times in 19 seconds. But point is, they shot down the plane. The plane fell in Syria. So obviously it was very, very close to Syria if it wasn't in Syria at the actual moment. And in fact, you know, as if you don't have enough problems when you're parachuting out of a plane, the Turkmen on the ground were shooting at these poor guys parachuting. Well, I don't want to call them poor guys. They are bombing them. But they killed one of them before he even hit the ground. The other one was able to escape, but not before someone else was killed trying to rescue him. Whole situation is a big mess. And keep in mind, too, that when Turkey goes in to bomb Syria, they're not bombing ISIL or Daesh either. They're bombing the Kurds. It's ridiculous. And, of course, the United States and all its friends are bombing Daesh, ISIL positions in other parts of the country. So everybody's bombing everybody else. And now you have a situation where Turkey and Russia are in a war of words. It's just really kind of crazy to hear Turkey warning Russia not to start something, as if they don't realize how much more powerful Russia is. I think they believe that NATO is going to have their backs no matter what they do, and I think they might need to just kind of be checked a little bit. In this particular case, I think Russia was a bit more rational. So,
sure. For whatever level of rationality you can glean from this kind of geopolitical playground, so to speak. But I think that it's worth noting, just to clarify, that those people we're bombing, we're depending on some of those people on the ground that are being bombed by the Kurds. The Kurdish fighters are people that we are depending on to push back against Daesh. So that's there's conflict there, and really we're having trouble, or we're concerned. Our main priority about just air traffic in general, not, you know, overlapping and having these kinds of misunderstandings and then having them escalate too quickly, to say nothing of the fact that the people we're trying to support are being bombed by other people that are more or less on our side in terms of NATO. And I mean, the Turkish fighter jet that shot down the Russian plane was a F-16. That's an American plane. So, hello.
This could spiral very quickly and for absurd reasons. So we have to try and be rational here. And we have to stop trying to alienate those who are actually pushing for the same thing, namely Russia. I think we should be working with them a lot more, not having these absurd battles over turf. When you push people into a corner, they're going to react. And that's not something I think we want to relive like we did with the Cold War. We don't need that again. There's lots of evil in the world that we can all unite forces to try and quell. But this situation, it took a turn for the worse this last week.
Yeah. So, we ease up on the posturing and puffery.
And then, okay, so we also had situations with cops in this country, namely Chicago and Baltimore. Baltimore, the trial of one of the first cops who was accused of murder started this past week. And in Chicago, we had the situation. Wow. I don't know if we have enough time for this. Hang on. I'm sorry. Why don't you tell me?
I'm getting word it might be helpful if we can maybe give a couple extra minutes for setup for the sports. Are we willing to sacrifice that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. How many couple of minutes?
Like five.
Yeah, okay. So we'll be out of here within 5 minutes.
22.
Okay, yeah, we can do that. No problem. The situation in Chicago is just, it's so corrupt.
Yeah.
That we don't have time for this.
Is this a guy that made bail?
He made bail, $1.5 million. Okay, this cop basically was shown on video executing a kid. The kid was running and had a little knife on him, but wasn't running towards the cops, was running away and had 16 bullets shot at him.
He was high. He had taken something that...
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if he was high. I don't care if he was actually flying in the air. He was not deserving of being executed like that.
No,
the video just came out this past week. And he was, the cop was charged right after the video came out. Now, when did this happen? This happened over a year ago. Over a year ago, Kyle. Why was the cop not charged over a year ago? Why did it take the video coming out for this to actually get some traction? That's the corruption right there. If there wasn't a video, do you think there would be any charges? No, there wouldn't be. There would be no charges. So that's what I consider to be complete and total corruption. Also, how about all the cops standing around while this guy needed medical attention who did nothing? How about all the cops that didn't say a word in the last year? How about the union that bailed him out on $1.5 million after him being charged with first-degree murder, which, by the way, first-degree murder, he has no chance of being victim on that. First-degree murder is premeditated. He had to plan this. They're not going to find him guilty of that. He should have been charged with second-degree murder. Why wasn't he? It's a very good question.
Now, when you say stand around, the cops standing around and this guy needed medical attention, what are you exactly talking about?
Well, when he was shot, there were a whole bunch of cops that were on the scene.
Okay, stop.
Obviously,
right there.
Obviously, the guy needed some attention.
Stop right there. So I would say even further prior to this, and this is why it matters that PCP was found in his system, the reaction entirely was just wrong. Mm-hmm. Way disproportionate
right.
to this guy's condition, e.g. he was on some bad substances that were making him act strange, and he had a small knife. If this is the same case,
yes.
I think that matters because I think the response was disproportionate. I think before bullets even were in the picture, this young man needed medical attention, not a police response.
Right. He needed the help of the police, if anything. But what I'm saying is after he was already shot, the rest of the cops just stood around, didn't do anything. And I think they should be charged, too. And I think all the cops that didn't come forward and say this is what happened, the ones that participated in this cover-up, they should be charged as well. This guy obviously fired the bullets, but they were complicit as well. And the entire governmental structure in Chicago is complicit. They made this story wait until after Election Day. Just like they made the story, remember the cop that killed himself, that there was this manhunt for these fictitious people that killed this cop. It turned out the cop was corrupt and had actually killed himself. That story came out right after Election Day, because they figured if it came out before Election Day, it could affect some powerful people. It's unbelievable how corrupt they are. They're just unashamedly corrupt. And we could talk about this for hours and hours. And I'd like to talk about it more in the future. I'm sure there'll be more developments.
There's a lot of ways to open this up. Like there's serious fervor, some clamoring. People would like to get some resolution and some real action, because this is it's pathetic. It's disgusting.
Yeah.
Anyway, we can't open it up right now. We actually must get out of here.
We have to vacate the premises. But we'll be back next week, and you can write to us, otw@2600.com. Let us know what you'd like us to talk about next week when we'll be on for a full hour.
Yeah, let us know if you heard anything that I said from a microphone, because I can't hear any of it.
Yeah, it's weird. We're in a situation where we can't hear Kyle in the headphones, even though the meters are moving.
I tried. I did everything I could.
I hear me and I hear the music. And I don't know why that should be, but hopefully the listeners heard it. If you didn't, let us know. Of course, online people, it's different, so
we
can't even tell.
We can only try again.
See you next week.
1, 2. I'm taking 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Need an introduction?
Yeah, he's doing it in a sec. You just want to make sure he can hear us.
Good evening, Seawolves fans, and we have a really great show in store for you tonight. My name is Jael Henry, and you're listening to WSB 9.1 FM Radio, the longtime home of Seawolves Sports. And tonight, with the call at the IFSCU Arena, we have Cameron Boone and Jeff Bernstein with live coverage of women's basketball game.
Good evening, basketball fans, and welcome to Island Federal Credit Union Arena here in Stony Brook. Tonight, we have a battle of 3-2s for you and a battle of SBUs as the St. Bonaventure Bonnies have invaded Long Island to take on the Stony Brook Seawolves. I am Cameron Boone. Alongside of me, as always, is Jeff Bernstein. And, Jeff, we got a big game coming up. The Seawolves coming off a tough loss to Ole Miss. But it was another one of those games where the score really did not tell the story of how well they played against an SEC foe at home.
Yeah, good team in Ole Miss, a team that probably would have won the America East, so a good test for them early on. Would have nice to come up with the upset, but I think they played well enough that they learned from it. Very physical team. They got beaten up from that game. Hopefully they are much better tonight in terms of just their health to play. Be nice to get this win tonight, Cam, because they go on their biggest road trip of the season coming up, Cornell, Syracuse, and Yale. So on the road before they've pretty much enjoyed the home court for two games. St. Bonaventure, solid team, really not indicative of their non-conference games. Siena and lost a tough one at DePaul and then lost at Drexel. So we really don't get a measuring stick of how that 3-2 is. I think the Seawolves playing Ole Miss will have an easier time with this. With the St. Bonaventure team, Cam, got a rebound, got to keep St. Bonaventure down to only one shot only on the offensive side, and I think the Seawolves will be fine.
And I think another big thing here today is this is a matchup of two teams that are very similar here. Stony Brook averaging just under 66 points a game, Bonaventure just above 63. They both allow around 60 points a game. Bonaventure shoots 43%. Stony Brook shoots 40.5%. They're both not great from three. They both take advantage of their free throws. So I think other than the names, other than the records, these two styles and these two teams on paper, it should be another great game here at Island Federal Credit Union Arena.
So you're saying it's going to be 62-62 with a minute to go, and then whoever has the last possession wins.
Whoever has the last possession wins.
No. Hopefully not for Stony Brook's end. You know, you just want to take it as progress. You want to get to that big game, as we've talked about, January 6th. That's the benchmark to open up the America East Conference against Binghamton. You just want to get better. I think Caroline McCombs has a couple things she needs to, you know, get accomplished. The veterans have to be more consistent, especially when they're playing in the America East. The underclassmen have to get more trust from the head coach, Caroline McCombs, because the underclassmen right now are just, they don't have enough trust, I think, the coaching staff in them yet as a whole. In the beginning, they played Wingate a lot, so they didn't, and Matthews, they're not playing them as much the last couple of games. And I think Caroline McCombs, as the non-conference continues, wants to have the underclassmen play much more. But you need, like I've said, you need the veterans to play more consistent. Corey Bain Walker, I think, has been, and Brittany Snow, those two have played very, very well for the Seawolves.
And one big freshman, as you brought up, Ogechi Anyagalibo, has earned the Under Armour America East Rookie of the Week for the past 2 weeks. For her and on tonight's game, we talked with Coach Caroline McCombs beforehand.
Coach Caroline McCombs, and Coach, you are in game two of a brutal kind of five-game stretch that you put together for your team. Outside of obviously winning the games, what is your goal? What do you want them to learn from playing the bigger opponents like this?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this is a great matchup for us tonight. Looking at the stats, we're very similar teams. You know, we're just thinking about tonight's ball game. We're not looking, you know, further past that. But, yeah, St. Bonaventure, they have a great tradition. They've got a well-rounded team, good balance inside and out. So, you know, they've had a great start to their season as well. Again, very similar to us, but, you know, playing in the A-10, a great conference, and they always do well there.
And then you guys played Ole Miss on Friday, and you said you guys didn't play your brand of what you wanted to play. But what kind of positives did you get out of that, you know, obviously fighting back from the rough start?
Sure, absolutely. You can't dig yourself a hole. After we got out of that, you know, we were pretty evenly matched the rest of the game. You know, again, taking care of us means not turning the ball over. And, you know, whether it's a team making us do those or just some unforced turnovers, we need to know what we want to do and how to execute. And, you know, just rebounding, we can always rebound a little bit better. And then, you know, we got to be able to knock down shots here. You know, we got to the free throw line just like we wanted to. We were just a little under our percentage, missing 13 free attempts. And so we need to be cognizant of that for tonight's game.
And then Ogechi Anyagalibo just got honored for the America East Rookie of the Week for the second straight week. She's having an amazing start. Did you kind of see when you were recruiting her that she'd be able to come in and have this impact right away?
Well, we knew we were losing, you know, two post players from last year's team, and so that was a high priority for us, targeting her early and trying to get her to come to Stony Brook. We felt like she'd be able to come in and make that immediate impact for us, and she's done a pretty good job so far. It's just a learning process for her every day.
All right. Thank you very much, Coach.
Thank you.
And Anyagalibo is in the starting lineup for the third consecutive game. Let's take a look at the starting five for each team. First, we are going to start with the home team, Seawolves. They are starting the squad for the third straight time of Krista Scognamiglio, Corey Bain-Walker, Kim Hanlon are in the backcourt, Brittany Snow, and Ogechi Anyagalibo in the middle. And we've switched out, or Coach McCombs has switched out Jarrell Matthews, who started the first couple games of the season, for Kim Hanlon. Outside of the experience, what does Hanlon bring here that necessarily isn't brought by the freshman Matthews?
Well, Hanlon gives you the spark. She plays that small forward position for Stony Brook. Hopefully she can hit you a three here or there. But she gives you the spark. She's played well. That's why head coach Caroline McCombs has given her the start. And, you know, we'll see how long it goes. I think, like I said before in the pregame, if Hanlon can keep playing well, she'll be fine. If she doesn't play well, they'll just go more into the bench, which we'll wait and see. Haven't seen much of Miranda Jenkins so far. We haven't seen a couple other players that I think eventually head coach Caroline McCombs is gonna play. But, you know, Anna Maria Scaro is a player that is a junior that hasn't played much at all from Croatia's junior college player. But Hanlon has done a nice job. I mean, she's played well. She's given it all she can. She's a senior. And hopefully, you know, the senior from White Plains will be that impact that it's not on a lot of scouting reports right now.
And the St. Bonaventure Bonnies hailing from Olean, New York, about southwest of Buffalo. Their starting five is the same it has been for the first five games of the season. Sophomore guard Mariah Ruff out of Oneonta, Nyla Reeder from Hagerstown, Indiana, Miranda Drummond, Emily Michael, and Katie Healy. And St. Bonaventure brings a very good team They made the second round of the WNIT in 2014. They made the Sweet 16 of the NCAA tournament just 3 years ago, going undefeated in the Atlantic 10. And one thing that Stony Brook is going to have to deny down low is the girl in the middle, Katie Healy. She has scored in 90 consecutive games as she gets set to play her 100th game of the season. Her and Nyla Reeder are two of the senior classmen for the Bonnies that are going to look to lead them to their third straight win.
St. Bonaventure Atlantic 10 team, as head coach Caroline McCombs mentioned, you have to be able to represent the America East and look at this as like a challenge series and say, hey, this is America East versus Atlantic 10. And we've got to, you know, represent the conference tonight and win against an Atlantic 10 team. You are not the favorite. Obviously, St. Bonaventure is the favorite today, but you are home. You know, they've come a long way down here to Long Island tonight to play this game. It's probably a 1-1. I'm sure Stony Brook will be playing at St. Bonaventure next season, but it's sort of a challenge series. You got to represent the league and knock off an Atlantic 10 team tonight to bolster your sort of profile.
There's the RPI factor in this game, as we have talked about, and as we alluded to in the interview, the second of five. It's a gauntlet. You know, every schedule has a gauntlet stretch, and this is Stony Brook's. You know, they played at home against Ole Miss on Black Friday. They host Bonaventure tonight, and then, as you alluded to earlier, they hit the road. They're at Cornell on Friday. They're at Syracuse at the Carrier Dome for a Sunday matinee, and then the following Saturday, December 12th, they are at Yale. So definitely an interesting stretch coming up here, and as always, you can catch those games right here on WUSB.
You know, from the coaching standpoint, from the media standpoint, two different ways you look at it, Cam. From the coaching standpoint, you're just trying to get better to play in the America East. It's a one-bid conference, and that one team is going to get in, and you're happy. Who cares what seed you are? From the media standpoint, you're looking at RPI for whatever reason. I don't know. People seem to forget it's a one-bid conference.
Yes.
So winning games in the non-conference is really, especially in the America East, is not really going to help you that much, other than maybe a seed or two, but it's sort of blowing it out of proportion. It's more, in my opinion, on the women's basketball end, the developmental thing to get ready for the America East because of the one-bid conference scenario.
And like we talked about, Jarrell Matthews already subbed out of the starting lineup as a freshman. Davion Wingate has always been Corey Bain Walker's backup since the beginning of the season. Ogechi Anyugalibo has come in and earned two straight America East Rookie of the Week. So the freshmen, like you said, are going to be a core part of this team even next year. So you want to get them going as quick as possible so that maybe by the end of the year, you know, you have Jarrell Matthews, Davion Wingate, and Ogechi Anyugalibo in a big conference game or maybe in a conference tournament game, and you can say, okay, these women know what they're doing. I can trust them to play to the capability that we need them to play in a big tournament game.
Well, I look at it two ways. I look at it one way, really. This team is about two players right now. Brittany Snow is the team, is the
yes.
captain of this team, is, you know, the warrior, as I call it. Is she's been the most consistent. Ogechi Anyugalibo is the future. So those are the only two players, in my opinion, that Caroline McCombs really is banking the season on. The other three starters could change at any given time, and hopefully it becomes more consistent who those other three starters are before that January 6th matchup against Binghamton, where they have a more of a consistent lineup. I hope Caroline McCombs, she realizes that she hopes that the bench will expand so she there could be more options of where to go. But she needs to find who those three other players are going to be on January 6th.
And you talk about expanding the bench. You talk about finding those players. When you get into conference, you don't typically see a rotation bigger than eight, maybe nine. You don't see the giant rotations that you might see in a non-conference schedule. So that's what this is about. Like you said, you're trying to find the other three starters. Who knows? Davion Wingate might come in and start for Bain Walker. We've already seen Hanlon come in for Jarrell Matthews. And I think you can kind of rotate around Scott-Emilio Hanlon and Jarrell Matthews. The teams have met twice since the school's inceptions, and neither of them have played since the 04-05 season. It was in 2003 when Stephanie Collins had one of the best single-game performances in Bonaventure history, netting 36 points in a 74-62 St. Bonaventure win. But it was at the Riley Center in 2004. St. Bonaventure came around with a 79-76 victory at the Riley Center. Jeff, final thoughts before we get going here.
No, big game. Like I said, I use it as a challenge. I would take the conference part of it as a motivation. Let's see if the America East can beat the Atlantic 10, show some pride tonight, and then go on to the road trip and then, you know, bunker together in the hotel and bond.
As they use the hashtag AE Pride, the conference gets going. And as we alluded to, that pride will up January 6th when the Seawolves solves Binghamton. But for now, let's turn it over to public address announcer Chris Murray.
Good evening, fans, and welcome once again to Island Federal Credit Union Arena for tonight's women's basketball game featuring the visiting Bonnies of St. Bonaventure versus your Stony Brook Seawolves.
We apologize for the pause here. They're trying to fix up the scorebook, it looks like. At least it looks like there's the scorebook on top of the table over where Murray and his crew are getting set to get this game underway. As we said, these teams have played twice, but not since the 04-05 season. It has been 11 years since the two SBUs of New York took the court together. And now the officials are going to huddle up, and it looks like we are ready to go.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we ask that you please rise if able as we honor the United States of America and those who protect our freedoms with the playing of our national anthem, being performed tonight by the Spirit of Stony Brook Pep Band. Let's meet tonight's starting lineups. First, for the visiting St. Bonaventure Bonnies. At guard, number 2, Mariah Roof. At guard, number 21, Nyla Reuter. At forward, number 32, Miranda Drummond. At guard, number 33, Emily Michael. At forward, number 42, Katie Healy. The head coach for St. Bonaventure is Jim Crowley. It's gonna get Wolves fans, are you ready? Here is your Stony Brook starting lineup. At forward, a 6-foot freshman from Miami, Florida, number 22, Ogechi Anyagaribo. At guard, a 5'9" junior from Orangeburg, New York, number 4, Krista Scagnamiglio. At guard, a 5'5" junior from Rochester, New York, number 5, Corey Bain Walker. At guard, a 5'8" senior from White Plains, New York, number 23, Kim Hanlon. And at forward, a 6-foot senior from Chemung, New Jersey, number 20, Brittany Snow. The assistant coaches are Chanel Harris, Adam Call, and Kelly Rotan. And the head coach for your Seagulls, Caroline Nick Combs.
In her second season, Coach Caroline McCombs looking to lead her Seawolves to a win after a loss on Black Friday against Ole Miss. They won 3 of their first 4. Again, welcome back to the game, everybody. Cameron Boone, Jeff Bernstein, courtside for you. And Jeff, the battle of the SBUs here, and I think, like you said, it's going to be Brittany Snow and Katie Healy down low. That's going to be where the bulk of the action is.
Yeah, and good job by Brittany Snow to score 20 points against the SEC opponent. And the player she played against was a lot tall, a lot physical. So I think tonight, Brittany Snow will do a good job moving her around, you know, taking, maybe getting the ball up at the foul line and driving to the basket and drawing fouls that way.
The officials tonight, Joanne Aldridge, Joseph Fazili, and Sean Good. Stony Brook in the white with the red trim. St. Bonaventure in the brown away jerseys in the white trim. Anya Galibo and Healy jump it up. Healy taps it forward. It is to Drummond, and we are underway. Michael drives in the lane, kicks it out top. That is Ruff. Ruff to the left wing, Drummond. Drummond puts it back out top. Healy, handoff. Michael drives into lane, tries kicking out, finds Reeder, who sends it back out top to Michael. 15 on the shot clock. Michael setting up the offense, hits Reeder. Reeder down to the post. It's Healy driving left, hand up, and good.
Well, we just talked about getting the ball out on the perimeter and driving. Healy did that exactly against Snow, so that's not a good sign for the Seawolves right off the bat.
Katie Healy versus Brittany Snow, two players that are going to do very, very well. Bain Walker into the right block, finding Snow. That's back out top Bain Walker. She had to catch it with one hand as the pass almost got away from her. 13 seconds left on the shot clock. Bain Walker gets a screen from Snow out top, 10 to shoot. To the right corner, Scagnamelio thought about it, gets a screen from Snow to the free throw line. Anya Galibo drives left, puts up the left hand, wild shot, no good, and a rebound by Reeder.
Reeder. Good stop there by Drummond against Anika Ligbo.
Bonaventure right to left on your radio dial. Out top to Drummond. Drummond drives in the lane, lays it up with the right hand, and St. Bonaventure out to a fast start, 4-0.
See that the Bonnies don't like to play the half-court offense, Cam. They like to go in transition, both offensively and defensively.
And it looks like Stony Brook is looking to slow it down. Bain Walker inside to the right block. Snow fakes her move. Anya Ligbo, one more. Hanlon, left wing three. Got it.
Well, we talked about Hanlon, about what her impact can be. If she can hit that shot, it can keep the Seawolves from keeping that lead.
100 seconds gone here. St. Bonaventure, a 4-3 lead. Healy on the right elbow, out to the right wing. That is Ruff. Ruff passes it. Healy on the in the corner, Snow guarding. Healy drives in the lane, kicks out top, back inside the Healy. Right hand up, too strong, and hauled in by Brittany Snow. Bain Walker is going to push it the other way. Bain Walker left to right to the corner, Hanlon. Hanlon gets a screen from Snow, uses it out to the top of the key. To Anya Galibo, right elbow extended to Bain Walker on the ring. Bain Walker drives into the lane, puts a pass inside to Anya Galibo, who puts it in. It looked like Bain Walker was going to float it up. She did, but it was a pass.
Assist, assist, assist. Bain Walker has to be able to draw assists today.
Healy drives in the lane, wild shot, no good. Anya Galibo hauls on the rebound. Back come the Seawolves. It's 5-on-4 as he's late getting back. Scott Emilio, right wing. Off the mark to the right. And a rebound inside by Michael, and the Bonnies are going to slow it down.
Well, they're slowing it down. I think they're one of their goals is to wear out the Seawolves, but I don't think that's going to happen tonight.
Both teams looking to control the tempo, and whoever does that most successfully is probably going to win this game. Michael drives into the lane with the right hand, stripped by Bane Walker, and it is out of bounds to Bonaventure, 12 to shoot.
Good block there, or strip, as you mentioned, by Bane Walker. Plays both sides of the ball very, very well. Bane Walker's got to have some positive marks on the stat sheet tonight, Cameron.
7:15 left in the first quarter. Stony Brook a 5-4 lead. 10 to shoot for Bonaventure. Ruff raises her right hand in the air looking for a play. Gets a screen from Drummond. Left elbow too strong. Rebound Bane Walker. The Rochester native pushing left to right. Drives into the lane. Kicks it to the right corner. Hanlon ball fake. Does not put it up. Now gets it inside. Anya Gleeble right block. Left hand. It was all ball inside by Reeder. And out of bounds to the Seawolves.
There's one thing, I'm sure more than one thing, but one primary thing that head coach Carolyn McCombs worked on was the turnovers. I'm not going to mention the number. They had a lot against Ole Miss. That's got to be cut down tonight.
Definitely more than you want. Snow gets the inbound pass from Scott Emilio, drives in, out to Anya Gleebo to the left wing, Bane Walker. Snow, left block, drives on Healy, loses it out of bounds, and that is the first turnover of the afternoon. It goes against Stony Brook.
Got at least draw fouls. Can't lose the ball like that. Because a good team like St. Bonaventure is going to take advantage of it.
And a good team like St. Bonaventure, but this is nowhere near the pressure that they faced on Friday night against Ole Miss. Healy's got it. Left wing to Michael. One more into the corner. That is Drummond driving baseline on Anya Gleebo. Ball fake. Puts it up. Wild shot. No good. And it is saved by Drummond. Deflected by Healy. Still loose. And picked up by Ruff right in front of us. Ruff, right corner. Michael pulls it out. Michael to the right wing, Ruff. Ball fake on Snow, tries driving, doesn't go. Now pulls up short as the shot clock expired. Anya Gleebo hauls it in. Bane Walker going left to right now to Kim Hanlon on the right wing. Hanlon with three, an early three. That got the Seawolves on the board. Snow hands it off Bane Walker. Left wing, under six to go here in the first quarter. Stony Brook 5, St. Bonaventure 4. Snow, ball fake on Healy, drives and throws it off the backboard. A wild layup that she could not get under control.
Yeah, she missed track of where she was on the court and just a little bit too much on that.
Bonaventure's scoring drought has reached 3 minutes. They've missed their last five shots. So who do they go to? Katie Healy. Left block, right hook,